Very much. Appreciate it. Okay.
Okay, and thank John very much. And our next speaker this morning, this afternoon, is Vic Winkler. Vic is the author of Securing the Cloud. He has 30 years engineering and leadership experience in IT, spanning information and cybersecurity, cloud computing, systems applications development, and IT operations. As a technologist who has developed commercial cybersecurity products, Vic has also developed business and marketing strategies. In his career, he worked for Planning Research Corp, Sun Microsystems, and Booz Allen Hamilton as an engineer. So, Vic has a developed and deep, broad expertise with leading-edge technologies. And with this,
Thanks.
Say welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Does it have a laser?
Red button.
Red button. Oh. Let me play with this. Let me play with this for a little bit. Well, thank you for having me here. Thank you, Marty. Let me get past the, here we go. That's me. That's my talk right there. These are my brands. I collected some personal brands. I've worked at four different companies so far, and I wrote one book. And as part of all this, I really discovered that I was a security guy, right? So years ago, when I was a little kid, I started taking things apart. I think I was a year old when I started actually discovering how a screwdriver and a pair of pliers worked. And those are really good traits for a security guy, because if you're not curious about the way things work, you're just gonna trust that they're gonna work, and then there you have it, they're gonna break. So it's the interfaces that typically go first. So this is kind of a distorted and completely inaccurate view of history of our fields. So on the left-hand side, mastery of device required. On the left-hand side, we have the mainframe, right? Centralized control and tyranny, right? Let's hear it for tyranny. I like that. White smocks, right? Drop off your cards. Mini computer, less control. So once a business department was able to afford their own mini computer, they threw out the white smocks and they just got a bunch of guys wearing blue jeans and so forth. And the erosion of control began in the enterprise, right? That was a very bad thing, the erosion of control. Then the PC arrived. My wife still thinks that the PC is a passing trend. And you know what? She's right. She's finally right. It's taken a long time, but she's finally right. And then we went to services-based control returns. That's the question, right? And then on the right-hand side, cloud and centralization returns, right? So I've used this slide for about 10 years now, and I keep adding stuff on the right and deleting stuff that becomes less important in the middle, right? And what we really have here is that the client platform was highly relevant in the beginning. It's become less relevant today. We have the rise of the network, and physical perimeters have eroded. So the idea that you have a firewall is an absurdity. It doesn't mean that you don't have firewalls, that you don't protect your perimeter, but it's what's inside the perimeter that most people don't really understand how to build properly and how to get security from point to point in an effective way. So we've done a whole bunch of other things here. They're increasing effectiveness, decreasing effectiveness, and so forth. So it's kind of an interesting perspective of things. I love the monkey holding up the cell phone, right? So this is, have you seen people carry their cell phones around? It's like a token. It's like some talisman, you know, like, anyway, I don't know. My sister would be one. So we've got these three big megatrends. I guess they're just megatrends, right? But and it's how they fit together that, don't hold your hand up like that, makes bad noise. It's how they fit together. And here we have the notion of the cloud media locker. Now, I happen to know a guy who founded Kazaa. You know, that thing is going to trip me up, but I'm careful. Okay. It always starts with the stay over there. Okay. This is not going to work for me. I'm not going to finish this. So what we really have, so I have a friend who's one of the founders of one of these big companies like Kazaa, right? And this is really where things have come from and where they're going in terms of media lockers. So we've got storage, which is moving from local only to a hosted model. And we have a proliferation of different kinds of devices for multi-platform access. The thing here, which I found really interesting about the last talk was about, or the one before, I'm so confused, but it doesn't really matter. It's all about being able to access your stuff once it's in the cloud or once it's in the media locker, right? And so with the ultraviolet standard, you can buy content in a physical way and get a key to access it in a virtual way. So this is really, it's all moving in this direction. It's moving at a pace that if you go on vacation, you're out of touch, right? So this is what Kevin says, and translated down into English, that cloud is going to be the answer for delivery of this kind of content, and that it's a combination of different things. It's going to be the costing, a single bill, you'll pay an annuity for it, and you'll keep getting access to it, and you're going to go from a world of piracy to a world of less piracy because the cost is right. So what do you keep in a cloud media locker? Well, it looks like most people keep music, then some keep photos, and in decreasing interest, video game collections and so forth. So this is 2011. Parks Associates put this together. That's a great report, by the way. I'm going to move over here. So don't worry about it. I'm fine. I used to fall off mountains. I'm Austrian. It's okay. So here we've got 136 years of content. It went by in a flash, right? So it started off with Thomas Edison with the phonograph in 1877. In 1888, De Prince, motion picture camera. We've refined that, 8mm movie, right? The home, 1932, 8mm movies. Seems like a long time ago, doesn't it? But, and then HD cameras, 1998. That wasn't that long ago. Here we've got CD, DVD, HD, DVD, Blu-ray. The increase in density and recording on these different forms of media is just astonishing. 1974, the CD, 700 megabytes. It's just amazing, really. So 1951, in the computer, in the digital world, 1951, punch cards. I remember doing punch cards, not back in 1951, because I was minus 4 years old then, but certainly in the 1970s. A magnetic tape, IBM PC XT. The XT came out with a 10 megabyte hard drive. I remember buying that thing and thinking, my God, I'll never fill this thing up, right? 10 megabytes. Photos, there was no digital photography or anything like that. So right now, we're at the point where you can do it all without any of those physical devices, and it's all available there. So we've gone from low density and high cost, 1956, 5 megabytes, 1999, 340 megabytes, 500 gigabytes in 2005, 1 terabyte in 2007 on a hard disk drive, a PC format, to 5 terabytes today. We've gone from storage capacity and network bandwidth, the power of 2 here, which we heard about just before. That was a great talk, by the way. We've gone from in the data center, local to the user, it's on your device, on your computer, different tiers of storage, recently storage as a service, and now we've got your data centers in the cloud, right? So what you used to have stored on your computer is shrinking, and it's moving out here to the storage provider. Same as the enterprise. It's shrinking, and it's being stuffed into cheaper storage in somebody else's infrastructure. So we don't really need to belabor Microsoft here, but they're looking for a strategy, right? Okay, not everybody used to work at Sun. But the 900-pound gorilla is still Amazon, and Amazon is disturbing lots of vendors. My wife works at Cisco, and it's very difficult for traditional vendors to compete with what Amazon's doing. It's very difficult. So in, what was this, 2006, 2.9 billion objects stored in Amazon's cloud in S3, to the second quarter of 2012, this is an old chart. I don't have access to better data. It was this much, a terabyte of objects stored. That was, I mean, this is the full year right here. And this is the first half of the year. So it's just an amazing growth in storage. It's just, you know, a throw outside Amazon's media stuff. But now, very easy to use these technologies. And I think the best quote I heard was about 2 years ago. CJ Moses, who was the chief security officer for Amazon, said that every week Amazon added as much storage capacity to their S3 offering as they had at the end of their first year in business as a book vendor. And since then, if you remember that slide just before, you know, it's got to be many times that. So as a security guy, I'm concerned about my stuff, right? So my stuff is everywhere. It's all over the place. And my kid's stuff is even more scary because she doesn't have any inhibitions about what she posts. But lucky for her, her parents can clean up her mess. But no, it's really a lot of concern. And I think that it really speaks to a perennial topic here, which is data level protection, right? So information is protected on your computer by access controls, right? As you move away from your computer, that makes it more difficult. You can encrypt the data on the hard drive. You can encrypt individual files, but if you haven't seen the article, it's several years old now. It's worthwhile digging it up. It's called Why Johnny Can't Encrypt. And there's a more recent article, which is Why Johnny Still Can't Encrypt. And because it's really hard to do it right. It's really hard for a non-cryptographer, a non-geek, to figure out how to get crypto right. So, but what you really want to do is you want to protect information at the data level. Every bit of information that you have ought to be wrapped and have access controls around it. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to just take stuff in stovepipes on your hard disk, encrypt it there, then decrypt it, encrypt it not when you're sending it, but as a function of sending it through a TLS or SSL connection. It just doesn't make sense to just do that. If you value your information, you owe it some self-defending capability, and encryption does that. So, but it becomes complicated if you share your stuff, right? That's the real difficulty. So every device has to be trusted if you're not going to protect information at the data level. There are going to be many copies of it. You know, you can joke and say, my backup is your email server. If I send you a file on email, the number of copies of that file have just multiplied. I not only have the original file on my drive, the one that I carefully created and protected, right, using Word and whatnot, but I have another copy in my sent mail folder. There's an archived copy somewhere else. There's a copy on servers in between And there's a copy in your mail folder, in your mail server. There's a copy in your mailbox. And there are copies in your archive. I can't retract all this. It's, unless it's been encrypted, and unless I've got it protected in a way that allows me to do that. So it really comes down to control over your data. You can't control your data if you just encrypt it on your hard drive. You have to do something different with it. What you really want to do is say that it can't be accessed no matter what copy it is, unless you have given explicit permission to the recipient, whoever that may be, to do that. Or the circumstances, business rules. You also want to have a record of every attempted access to it. Right? It's your stuff. There's nothing magic about digital information, except that it makes it easier for the sorcerer's apprentice to make, you know, broom after broom after broom, copy of the data over and over. So the basic requirement is that every copy of your data ought to act the same way. If you affect a control on one copy, the original copy, as it propagates, every copy ought to work the same way. So how do you do that? Well, you can build some self-defending functionality into the data, which looks like a rootkit, because the only way that that can work on every device that it's copied to is if it has system-level privileges, which it will never have. Or it can have some form of information rights management or digital rights management or something like that. So the NSA calls this ORCON, right? But when they take a stamp and they stamp a piece of paper, a document, with the word ORCON on it, that's the pretend ORCON. That's the stuff that you can take a copy of, right? You're just not following their business rules or practices. But if you do this in the digital realm, it's real ORCON. It's real originator control. So there are three things that you really want. And this is just about the last slide. Put that down. I'm cool. So this is a key-granting ORCON. So this has to, every business rule that I, the originator of the content, put around that object has to be met by you when you request a key. That's a pre-key granting form of ORCON. The second one is a usage control. So these are specific modes of operation that the client has to enforce before I can grant the key to the client to unlock the content. For instance, the client can prevent or would need to prevent a copy, making a local copy, printing it if it's printed material, et cetera, right? And the third one is metadata, which is king, as we know. So this is the last slide. And you know, wrapping this all up back into the Cloud Media Locker story, well, it's just easy. It's always available. You'll always have access to it. The missing ingredient here, the secret thing, is network connectivity. And we don't have that everywhere, but we've got it in plenty of places to make this the compelling story, and it will become more and more compelling in those other, you know, outposts where you barely get internet. But it's all going to come down to this. That's it.
Going to ask John and Tom and Gary Bilabia.